This is a Tarot reading on the question, what is the divine law of radiation and how can aspirants best harness it? This is the second in our series on the laws of life. Our first examination 2 weeks ago was into the law of fixation. And very interesting in that a lot of the cards that come up in this particular spread about the law of radiation makes sense in the context of what we talked about with, did I say fixation? I meant fulfillment, right?
Okay, I was starting to look back in my notes. Yeah,
it was fulfillment. I, of course, was being fixated, but not fulfilled. And after about 20 seconds, I recognized the difference. We will eventually do the law of fixation, but not yet. What we did two weeks ago was the law of fulfillment, and which was absolutely the best place to start. In this spread, we're going to find a number of cards that echo fulfillment, and we'll get some interesting insight as to why and see how the two dovetail together, even though there's no card in this spread that we had last time. So I've already laid out the cards, the question being, what is the divine law of what is the divine law of radiation and how can aspirants best harness it? And the spread is as follows. The starting point is the Seven of Rods, right side up. The counterpoint is the Ten of Cups, upside down. The
Creative Challenge
is the King of Cups, upside down. The Purpose is the Nine of Cups, right side up. The Endowment is the Moon, right side up. 18th card in the Major Arcana, which makes a 9. The Destiny is the 8 of Rods, right side up. The real question is the Star, right side up, and that's number 17 in the Major Arcana. And the hidden, the unseen forces, the hidden dimensions of the problem, 8 of Swords, upside down, the Spiritual Ideal, the Queen of Rods upside down, and the culmination of the Queen of Cups right side up. So you can immediately see a number of interesting things. First of all, there's 6 upright cards and 4 reversed. There's 2 majors, 1 sword, 3 rods, 4 cups, and 0 pentacles, meaning we're really not dealing that much with the physical plane tonight. Now, the most interesting thing of this spread is we have 2 majors, number 17 and number 18, the Moon and the Star, suggesting strongly that radiation, the law of radiation, is one that starts beyond our earth plane and leads us back to interstellar sources. The other interesting aspect of this, and that's part of it, is we have a king, 2 queens, we have a 7, 2 eights, 3 eights really, 9s and 10s. Now, I grant you that 10 would become a 1 numerologically, but here it's 7, 8, 9, 10, and then no jacks, or knaves, and no pages and no knaves, or knights. The what we have here are 7, 8, 9, 10 king or queen king. So we're dealing with very advanced levels. All these cards are toward the end or the fulfillment of the learning process. And indeed, we only really learn to radiate as we learn the basic lessons of how life is structured and what it is. And so it takes a sophisticated or a well-educated esoteric mind to begin working even with this concept of the law of radiation. Now, for full disclosure here, I took DK's terminology, the law of vibratory response, vibratory expansion, and changes the law of radiation. If you look up the law of radiation in the index, you won't find anything there. But that's because I renamed it. So for the purpose of this series, law of radiation. It's really talking about the law of radiation. And so we can go to the starting point here, the Seven of Rods. And the Seven of Rods is, of course, this mature husbandman, the embodiment of maturity and responsibility, who watches out for and nurtures the growth that is in his charge. He's got six growing shrubs there, or rods, and he's drawing them upward to their fulfillment. And so the whole notion of radiation is that energy moves forward. Ideas, emotions, everything that's real, important in our life embodies ideas and ideals and spiritual forces that must be, as they grow on Earth, must grow from seed to seedling to maturity. So again, this whole idea of fulfillment comes back in, that radiation occurs in concentric circles. That's why I've put up the illustration of concentric circles there for your edification. Radiation starts from the central hub and moves out to the outermost extent, and then it hits this wall of pressure, the ring pass knot, and can't penetrate it. If it did, it would move on to the next level, which we saw last time with fulfillment. But it reaches the outer level of possibility, and then it rebounds. It creates an echo, and it moves back toward the center. This is the law of radiation. Or, as DK calls it, the law of vibratory expansiveness. Yes. The vibration moves outward, hits the outer ring pass knot, and then moves back in toward the center, bringing with it everything that's been learned and gained and added to it in the process. Now, it's difficult to understand this physically because things don't work that way. If you actually had six trees, they would remain rooted where they were in the earth. They wouldn't move towards the outermost extremity and then return. But these are forms that express energy. And when we deal with the laws of life, we're dealing with how the divine mind and divine plan governs the distribution of energy throughout creation. And this is exactly the idea here. It starts at the center and radiates just like a candle lit in the darkness starts at the wick and radiates out equally until it reaches as far as it can. A pebble dropped in the center of a lake ripples out, hits the boundary of the lake, and comes backward. Talbot Mundy talked about this in I Say Sunrise, talking about the principle of that if you toss a pebble in the ocean in South America, it will affect the stock prices in New York. Well, I think that might be a little overstated in terms of how things happen on the physical plane, but esoterically, it's a very relevant concept. And therefore, everything we do has consequences, intended or otherwise. Everything we send forth brings back a product, a reward, a punishment, opportunity, hardship, whatever it might be, depending upon the quality of what we've set forth. And the Seven of Rods here is telling us the absolute importance of the whole, the W-H-O-L-E, the entirety, the source to the outer possibility, outermost possible edge, and then back again. And from that, once you return back again, you create new seeds, you plant them, they grow up, you raise them up with your expectation, with his seventh rod, and they produce a new crop of maturity. Mostly this process happens in energy rather than visibly in form. But that's just our liability of working down here on the physical plane. So the use of responsibility to infuse certain ideas, certain lessons, certain qualities into consciousness of the form is very, very key to this process of radiation. As human beings, we do have a form, but we're meant to, well, we can look forward briefly to either the Nine of Cups or the Queen of Cups, and recognize these are both cards of fulfillment. At the emotional level, we're meant to achieve enrichment so that our use of emotion always enriches the forms around us on Earth. Never detracts, never irritates, never attacks, never sabotages, always enriches. I think we can conclude that that's sometime in the future for humanity. But as aspirants, and part of this is how can aspirants best harness it, we harness the law of radiation to produce enrichment of the emotions. And we use the law of radiation to produce wisdom and light in the mind. So it's important to understand this and to understand also that this depicts, one way of looking at the Seven of Rods is to see the individual, the wise husbandman here depicted, as the master of an ashram, and the six rods represent his students, his chelas, his disciples. And one of the principles of the law of radiation is that it's always the source that moves everything else. And so as the master or the guru makes breakthroughs and grows, his students get an opportunity to make breakthroughs and grow. And the people in their families and the people that associate and try to learn from them get opportunities to grow. Of course, the master is not the hub of things. And part of the law of radiation is to realize that the master himself is part of a hierarchy, which is has its central hub, the Christ. And as the Christ grows and becomes more radiant, the guru gets an opportunity to grow, I mean the master, and the students get an opportunity to grow, and so on and so on and so on. And yet that's only a tip of the story too, because the Christ is the major figure in humanity, but he's linked to the divine will. And so as the solar logos grows, so that advances the potential for the Christ to grow, which advances the potential for the Master to grow, which advances the potential of the aspirants to grow, which advances the potential for everybody all down the food chain down to little kitty cat. And they can grow too. That's radiance, radiation, you see. But truth be told, it doesn't stop there. Because the solar logos, what we would refer to as God, in turn is an aspirant, a disciple, in the section of the universe run by the one about whom naught can be said, Irving. Mm-hmm. And he's a disciple in some other ashram way beyond our comprehension. And so, for example, the masters with their ashrams are not independent agents. There's a Ray 2 ashram, a Ray 1 ashram, a Ray 3 ashram, and it's the nature of the Ray energy that dictates the type of radiance that's going to occur. And we might think, well, there goes free will. We're all slaves to some energy coming to us from Arcturus. No, it means that our life is defined by some energy coming to us from Arcturus or from Taurus or Gemini or Leo or Cancer or whatever. So it's very, very important to penetrate beyond the form and understand that this is the essence of growth. Vibratory expansion. The pebble dropped into the lake ripples outward and ripples back in. And in the process of that, creates cycles. In this can be found a key to understanding the mystery of death. Because after all, once you reach the outer edge, you've got to come back to the center. That's what happens when the form dies. The energy that has invested the form is reabsorbed by the soul, and the whole process starts over again. So this law of radiation explains and dramatizes and gives insight into the whole process of dying and rebirth. It gives insight into the whole nature of cyclic energies. So, for example, to give you an example, the freedom was dropped into the center of English society in the early, around 1200 or something like that. And as a seed, it grew a few little sprouts here and there. And then the king would come along and stomp on it and kill it. And then it would grow a little bit more. And, England's gone through an awful lot of repression of freedom. Catholics weren't allowed, after the Church of England was formed, Catholics were definitely second-class citizens. Taxed at a much higher rate than everybody else. Obama would have loved it. Yet through all that process, freedom grew and became stronger until finally, because of religious persecution, Puritans and other Methodists and everybody else came over to this country, not just from England, but from throughout Europe, to find religious freedom, which meant they would be free to persecute everybody else. But out of that, even though there were 13 colonies and they all practiced a different form of religion, out of that mishmash came union, and freedom has continued to grow and develop. But, you see, there are enlightened views of freedom and there are closed-minded, bigoted, prejudiced views of freedom. Freedom is often used to deny freedom. In the name of freedom, people often pass laws or advocate them to deny other people freedom, which obviously is not freedom. But the idea of freedom grows out, and then it comes back to the heart, then it grows out some more, it comes back to the hub. And this is the way all ideas and all things work. Okay, so then we go on to the Ten of Cups. Ten of Cups is a man and a woman, or so we think, looking at each other with goo-goo eyes, and the Ten Cups, a nice, lovely rainbow coming in out of nowhere, filling the tenth cup. And it kind of forms a heart in the background. Now, this is not anything like what you think, because we're talking about the law of radiation here. It does have a passing reference to fulfillment again, because it's the 10th card in the cups. But the two people here represent humanity and the angelic kingdom. Because as you know esoterically, although you probably haven't spent much time thinking about it, our bodies, mental body, emotional body, and even physical body, but especially the emotional and mental bodies, are made of angelic substance. We borrow angelic force, elemental force, to shape our emotions and our minds. And so these are energy fields. And our identity is really an energy field. This energy field, emotionally and mentally, works under the auspices of the law of radiation. It's governed by the law of radiation. We send out desires. We seek our heart's desire. We pull it back toward ourselves. It's either enlightened or it's stupid, but that's the way we work. Or we formulate a thought, an idea, and we send it forth and gradually draw back whatever it magnetically attracts to, and we're either enriched or we're humiliated by what we draw back to us. And in doing this, we have to recognize that we should very humbly recognize that we are heavily influenced by dint of the fact that our mental bodies and our emotional bodies are made of angelic substance. In the East, they call the angels devas, shining ones. And they're the creative builders. This is the energy that we put forward. As Edgar Cayce was wont to say, the mind is the builder. The mind has the capacity to draw together energy, mental or emotional, shape it with desire, and send it forth to see what comes back to it. And that's really the process, in a nutshell, of thinking and emoting, of consciousness. However, of course, this whole concept depends upon, energy can be positive or negative. You can shape emotional energy with malice and hate, and you will get all kinds of demons drawn to you. You can shape an idea or an emotion with divine will and send it forth, and it will produce fulfillment. It will activate the forces of abundance and providence in divine life and draw these things to you, and you will be a success. Now, here we get down to why I picked this topic for tonight. Tonight is the fourth day in the five-day festival of Wesak. And yesterday, there was a tremendous stimulation of energy in the human family, sending radiation outward to all who might respond. While some people are more responsive than others, obviously, those who are masters or close to masters would have a tremendous response to this and be filled with vision and a sense of power, empowerment for the year to come. People who are bogged down in their selfishness would ignore it entirely. Somebody who is focused in their own guilt or hate or shame would not have a clue what was going on. And so it's up to this is where we come to the part of the question, how can aspirants best harness the law of radiation? Because of the law of radiation, we are able to observe, evaluate, and change the impact of any energy in our system. We have a stable, relatively stable system. If we have a mental breakdown, it's not too stable. But we have a relatively stable system of emotions and thoughts. And if we send out an idea and we get a chorus of psychic boos back, we might need to evaluate what it is. Now, obviously, if we send out the idea that we must respect one another, if we get boos back, it's from people who don't want to advance the idea of respect or goodwill. And that's important to understand. So there's lots of people who would respond to the energies of WESAC with resentment, with rejection, with disbelief. After all, there are people out there that consider themselves to be atheists and they're proud of it, and they would reject anything that comes to them from a divine source. So the key here is we need to understand the importance of balance. We are a point of light within the light of God. And that means that we can get incoming energy from divine sources, the zodiac, for example, or the rays. And we need to be able to balance our responsiveness to that and absorb it and let it permeate our life. And then simultaneously, we're trying to impact life in the physical plane. And so there's constant feedback impacting us. And if we try to heal someone and they interpret that as manipulation, we're likely to get an astral slap in the face and say, well, all I was trying to do was heal. You've got cancer or something. I was trying to help you, and it's mind your own business. Okay? So there's this balance. You see, we have to balance our position vis-a-vis the universal life and vis-a-vis the personal life. There's a wonderful prayer. I think it comes out of Divine Healing of Mind and Body, Murdo McDonald Bain. Some of you know it. Father, thou knowest me. I know thee to be the only living being, the one creator, and I am one with thee. As I ask of thee, I know it is accomplished. My words do not return unto me void, but accomplish that which they are sent forth to do. Or something like that. The idea here is we send forth our inspirations. We shape them with our personal desires, the desire for peace on earth, goodwill toward men. That's still a desire. But we learn to shape it without being personally involved in this. We shape it as a blessing to humanity. We send it forth. We then must expect it to come back to us. When we do any creative work, we're sending forth ideas and putting them out in the mass consciousness. We expect them to come back to us. Hence, when I write books or columns, the real writing is not what I put down on paper. It's the idea that I shape in my mind, and that is radiated out for everybody to inspect and be inspired by or think about. And, of course, the physical writing helps people focus on that. Most people are not developed enough to be able to read the psychic correspondence of what's the big idea. They have to read the book. But the ideas radiate out and permeate mass consciousness. All right. if anybody has any questions as I'm going along, feel free to ask.
I just have a comment.
Rose has a comment.
I think of the books published by Ariel Press and Thea Press and Kudzu House as, well, really each title and then all of the books out there that have been produced and sent out, I think of those as all radiating points of light out there in mass consciousness, radiating out what they have to offer, so that then when an aspirant or anyone is praying or looking for help, that they are magnetically, their help, their need magnetically links up with what one of these books might have to offer.
Sure. And that's what we're talking about here, the law of radiation. And if you do something to help another person, even if it's a question of helping them learn a foreign language or whatever it might be, that becomes a radiation. And that allows them to come closer to their own personal self-discovery. So good. This is the principle. Now we go on then to the third position, the creative challenge, purpose challenge, whatever it is.
Creative challenge.
And we have the King of Cups. And the King of Cups is Mary Old Soul. He's got his hand around, fist around the cup. And he's a incarnation of divine energy on earth. The King, of course, represents mastery and authority. And his grasp of the cup indicates the absolute importance of desire in this. We don't talk a whole lot about desire in the classes, except how to transmute selfish desire into the will of God. But this is basically what we need to focus on here, is that this whole process is one of shaping the will of God to transform basic desire into something much more sublimated, much more sublime. And we need to have that desire firmly disciplined in order to embrace the outer limit and then draw it back to the heart. Obviously, if we get too involved in our creative work and we are drawn out towards the outer limit, the laws of divine life are less clear. And people debate, well, what does it mean? Thou shalt not kill, or thou shalt not sleep with thy mule, or whatever it is. That's one of them, isn't it? Oh, it's covet your neighbor's mule. That's how covet your neighbor's ass. It can be interpreted a number of ways. The idea here is that we need to, in order to harness the law of radiation, we need to achieve discipline, and we need to learn to work with the will of God, so that we don't get carried away by desire. We need to transform desire into divine will, desire into authority. Then we come down to the creative purpose, and we have the Nine of Cups. This is the journeyman disciple who takes pride in his capacity to handle any problem that comes along, solve it, spit it out, chew up life, spit it out, etc. Nine cups. He's an award-winning person, very proud of what he does. And so what this is suggesting is that the law of radiation is a central key to success and achievement, and in fact poise. The fellow in the Nine of Cups has the capacity to envision just about anything. He's inspired, and in a very mysterious way, this suggests that we are designed to exceed ourselves. And this is almost the conundrum of human life, or the puzzle of human life. We live in form, but we're meant to exceed the limits of that form. The human form is not intuitive. It has the potential to be intuitive, but the average human being is not intuitive. The average human being can't do all different kinds of things, can't walk on water, can't part the Red Sea. And yet, oddly enough, we are designed to take whatever endowment we're given, take it to the uttermost edge of possibility, and then bring back what we've reaped. And so we're meant to exceed ourselves. We're meant to get to the outer edge and then do something better. Kick it up a notch. In other words, find a higher turn of the spiral in which we can be inspired by the true sources of things. There's a passage that I want to briefly allude to from DK. He's talking about form building. Let the creator know himself to be the builder, but not the building. Let him desist from dealing with the raw material on the physical plane, and let him study the pattern and the blueprints as the agent of the divine mind, in other words, archetypal force. Let him use two energies and work with three laws. These are the dynamic energy of purpose, conforming to the plan, and the magnetic energy of desire, drawing the builders, the devas, the angels, to the center of endeavor. Center of endeavor is that hub at the center of the concentric circles. Let these three laws hold sway, the law of synthetic limitation, of vibratory interplay, and of active precipitation. The one concerns life, the second concerns the building, and the third produces manifested existence. So right there we have that phrase, vibratory interplay or expansion, which is law of radiation. And it goes on. This is on page 278 of Treatise on White Magic. This is the law of radiation. It's what we're designed to do. We are designed and put here on earth to break through our ignorance, to exceed ourselves, to discover the existence of the energies of the zodiac and learn how to enrich life with them, how to use them to build effectively, to discover the archetypal forces and the ray energies and all of these things, and learn what to do with them. So that's our challenge. The challenge of radiation is to stop being a form and becoming living energy that radiates outward and draws back to you. Then we get to the endowment, the moon. Notice the rippling of the waves right under the name moon. There's a big picture of the quarter moon, and then he is hovering above the sea, and there's these monolithic pillars of the residue of ancient evil there. So this indicates that there are forces that intensify energy. There are phases of the moon when everything's stirred up. The full moon is a time of great opportunity, but also a time of greater irritation and greater difficulty. especially if you're driving a car. The but the whole notion here is that there are forces in life that can intensify or diminish energy. That's not what we're about. We're about radiating energy. We're learning to radiate energy. We've already gone through a cycle of learning to deal with increase and decrease in energy. Now we're learning to radiate it. And so we go to the destiny, card of destiny, the Eight of Rods. And that's about the starkest card, the barest card, the most minimalist card in the whole deck. We have eight rods all running in parallel, all above the horizon. And we have a mountain that seems pretty desert-like. No trees, no nothing, no flora or fauna. And so we have you can take any one of these archetypal forces, and you're invited to trace it back to its source. The source is somewhere off to the left side of the card. So we have the moon is the impact. You know, if you're standing on the beach and a tsunami rolls in and you get knocked down by a 20-foot wave and somehow miraculously manage to survive it, you have felt the impact of tremendous pressure. You haven't done anything to protect yourself, but you felt the impact. So that's the impact of energy. The Seven of Rods, our starting point, embodies the wholeness of the energy, whole, wholeness. And the Eight of Rods, our destiny, indicates the source from which the radiation began. This could be our own heartfelt desire, our recognition that people need to learn to think, and so we want to promote that by reforming education, and we send forth ideas to promote thinking in schools and society. But it may very well be that each one of these rods takes you, well, obviously it takes you up to archetypal levels, it takes you up to zodiacal levels, it takes you up to the plan of God. These are the true sources. And so this is why I emphasize in everything I do, tracing ideas back to their source. If you encounter a word, go back and find the etymological roots of that word, not what it means today. Who cares? Now, there's a lot of people out there that think that I'm crazy because the only thing that matters is what it means today. But, you know, 200 years from now, nobody will be paying attention to what they think it means today, because the word will have evolved into some other meaning, quite possibly the antithesis. So their effort to define what it means this moment in time might give them some slight element of clarity in talking to other people, but other people don't necessarily know that same definition, so there's no clarity there anyway. The only possible way to get clarity is to trace all your words, all your ideas, all concepts, all principles, all laws back to their source in divine life. It's very interesting. I've been thinking the last few days about leadership. And the word leadership comes from the word lead. And you go back and you check the etymological history of lead, and you guess what? It goes back to Proto-Indo-European, which is the fancy name linguists give to Atlantean. So the word leadership had a meaning in Atlantean, and it meant to guide, to direct, it's definitely the spirit of the pioneer bushwhacking a trail through the jungle and letting other people follow. The master leads the way. The disciples follow. The moment the disciples decide they know more than the master, they go wandering off the path, and they're lost until the master comes finding them. and the master will not probably be in a good humor when he finds them. So we need to develop this marvelous mental skill of tracing everything back to its source. Its source in the physical usage, in human usage, its source in divine usage. And to understand, for example, as you've frequently heard me say, there is no word nothing above the mean. It doesn't exist. It has, there's no concept of nothingness. There's a concept of fulfillment, there's a concept of completeness, but there's no concept of nothingness. It doesn't exist. It exists here in the finite world, but once you get to the outer edge of nothingness, you start going back to fulfillment, the hub, and the illusion evaporates. This is the way energy works. A mind conceives of a new insight into freedom and sends that idea out to penetrate and permeate the entire body of thinking in the United States, America, and other free societies working with this. A good way of thinking of this, the spirit of America contemplates the nature of freedom, and it's constantly evolving here in the physical United States. And then we get together and we trade ideas, and we end up with shouting heads and people coming to blows, fist fights in the street, and that's where humanity... But, you know, it indicates a level of intensity which needs to be bottled and controlled, disciplined, but that's what allows us to grow. So that's the destiny, is learning to see that everything of value and meaning in our life can be traced back to divine sources. It operates under the auspices of divine law, start with the law of radiation being key to its expression. Okay, so we've gone through the first six cards. Now we come to the pillar of revelation. The real question is the star. And the star is a phoenix rising out of its ashes. And right above it is a star which embodies perfectly all of the colors and potential expressions that this bird is modeled after, but so much more. This is the point of light within a greater light that radiates its brilliance throughout the world. And the star is hovering there above the valley where the bird is, and is able to radiate and fill the entire valley of darkness with its light. So, what is the real question? Well, the real question is, what is the source of light that guides us? And we should always ask that. What is the source of enlightenment, the source of brilliance that we're seeking to harness and express here? For our intellectual understanding, our intuitive vision, and our emotional fulfillment. How can we exalt ourselves to become at one with this source? You see, the star indicates our problem. There's no direct link between the bird and the star. There's no direct link between the personality and the soul, or between the soul and the monad, the life of the Father. And yet, through the law of radiation, we are able to link ourselves with these things, just like the radio waves can be traced back to their broadcast station. TV waves can be broadcast back to the TV station. And one single station can permeate an entire domain. And everybody within that range can tune into the TV station and get the signal. and play it. And so everybody within in the within my domain can take courses and take sessions like this. And if they're responsive, they can discover these ideas. And they can learn about the law of radiation. That's the way it happens here. Now, the fact that this is a bird here indicates, again, reminds us that this whole issue, this whole idea of radiation is, it happens through the ether of the angelic kingdom, through the substance of desire and mind. Yes, at the level the Buddhi, at the intuitive plane, we don't need the angelic substance to radiate through. But mentally and emotionally and physically or etherically, we need the angelic substance to encapsulate ideas, empower them with our desire or preferably divine will, and then send them forth. And the more clearly we learn to formulate ideas and empower them with this divine will, the more we can influence other people. Now, when you stop and think about this, we have many examples of this. Not all of them are positive. The image of the bully, which everybody is getting so uptight about these days, the bullies already have always existed, thugs. That's the Hindu, the Indian term, the Indian Hindu term for a certain religious type of violence, thuggery. What?
Thuggery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thuggery. And so a bully is simply somebody that tries to enslave and manipulate people by intimidating them. And we have plenty of examples of that from childhood on up to the level of the nation and countries trying to bully one another. And it's the wrong kind of radiation. It's the radiation of the illusion of power and muscle. I can beat you up. And I can beat you up with both hands tied behind my back. I'll just kick the crap out of you. See, that type of boasting, that type of intimidation. Well, that's where the pressure is unequal. And it only works if spineless people say, oh, okay, please, I do enjoy it when you beat me up. And that's an example of humanity learning something about radiation. It's a deplorable example. It's not one that I promote. But you need to see that this is what it is. It's one person, and you can find them in every family, it's one person trying to tell other people how to live their lives. And it is a form of radiation. Now, in this case, the desire is entirely selfish, totally out of control, and the bully is going to end up inevitably attracting to him a bigger bully that will beat the living daylights out of them. And that'll happen over and over again until they give up their bullying ways. But eventually, it forms the basis or the groundwork for understanding that if you send out helpfulness and loving thoughts, forgiveness, a sense of well-being and stability, you can have a tremendous impact on the world around you. Again, a good example of this is morale. If there's one person with lousy morale in an office of 30 people, soon everybody in the office has bad morale. But conversely, if there's somebody in the office with inspired stability and joy, who has connection with something stronger than the bad morale, that office can become a healing force. That's his same principle on a small scale. Now, as you grow in your understanding of the law of radiation, the individual aspirant, disciple, practitioner, whatever you want to call them, learns to radiate well-constructed ideas and healing energies throughout the entire world, out to the outer limits and back, out to the outer limits to accomplish that which they are intended to do. This is the medium for fulfilling will, for fulfilling divine authority. You learn, as you get more and more of a capacity to do this, you learn how far your authority stretches. And within that ring pass knot, it may be a college campus, it may be township somewhere, it might be a whole nation. But you learn to radiate your constructive thought and your intent to help and to guide out like a lamp shining on a lampstand. Okay, so the question is, what source of light guides us, and how can we become at one with it so that we're able to download it in our efforts to serve and work? This then leads us to the unseen forces. The card here is the Eight of Swords. The disciple, or somebody dressed in pink, is blindfolded, tied up, and entrapped in the residue of evil. And there are four swords on one side and four swords on the other. Those are the same forces of energy that we just saw in the Eight of Rods, in the card of destiny. But the individual here is entrapped in negativity, worry, fear, anxiety, you name it. And as you know, if you're worried about something, you're radiating worry to beat the band. And as most of you know, if you're angry with somebody or jealous of somebody, you're radiating that out at least as far as is required to reach them. And probably a good deal further. It certainly embraces everybody that you care about in a negative way. So we know from negative emotions how to radiate. We do it automatically. We do it without control. And we are, therefore, if we don't control our thoughts and feelings, they control us. And we can be controlled by a closed mind. We can be controlled by doubt, by limited thought, by anger. And, of course, what we do is then as we energize these forces of negativity, they become destructive. They're negative energies. They become destructive, and they lead to cancers, and they lead to senility, and they lead to all different kinds of breakdowns in the physical system, so that when we die, we don't die gracefully. We, you know, where we recognize that we've gone as far as we can go, and then we stop and go back to source. No, we die a painful death, sometimes lingering, sometimes very punitive. But here we are. This is the unseen picture. We are here in form. And as unfair as it may seem, we better get to understand the limits of form. We are put down here on earth and trapped in negativity and materialism so that we can liberate, first of all, liberate ourselves, and secondly, upgrade all the energy that we interact with, and that's the way we enlighten the earth plane. It's a marvelous system, because even the person that's trapped in it is serving the plan of God. And the moment we break through those bonds, then we are able to start radiating the very forces that will preserve our liberation. We learn that we don't have to be trapped by our fear. We don't have to be trapped by our reactiveness. This is just automatic behavior under the law of radiation. We can break loose of our bonds by radiating goodwill, benevolence, good ideas, freedom, wisdom, intelligence, and so on. All right. In this context, of course, we learn a lot about mass consciousness because that's the unseen force in which we live and move and have our being, until we discover that it's the mind of God in which we live, mind and heart of God in which we live and move and have our being, and we transfer our attention from mass consciousness to the divine. And this means that the lesson is to serve the divine, to always trace things back to their divine sources, and then radiate them like a lamp on a lampstand. It's not a complex concept. Then we come to our last two cards, the spiritual ideal and the fulfillment. They are both queens, Queen of Rods and the Queen of Cups, which really nicely puts the punctuation on this, because we've been talking about our vehicles for radiating and leavening the earth plane is the mind and the enlightened emotions. So we'll look at the mind first. The queen represents maturity at the mental level. The Queen of Cups represents maturity at the emotional level. The Queen of Rods is a majestic, statuesque lady with a big flower here and a rod in the other hand. And what we're talking about here is the ability to fill the mental aura with noble ideas, not to let it be corrupted by ignoble ideas, but always to hold it steady in nobility, in its latent, nascent nobility. And so we don't allow it to be corrupted by cruelty, by competitiveness, etc., 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 the things that cheapen the mental experience. We know that we serve the truth. We know that the truth exists at inner levels, but we radiate truth, integrity, etc., etc., as the basic element of our self-expression. And ultimately, this is what we're talking about here. We've been talking about it throughout this whole spread. The law of radiation should become the basis of our enlightened self-expression. Then we come to the final card, the fulfillment. And this is the Queen of Cups. Queen of Cups is a radiant image here. Her entire torso is glowing with light. her head is electrified with energy flowing down from the crown. And this represents the ideal of fulfillment, which is the key to understanding the emotions. The key to understanding the mind is nobility, the enlightened, noble mind that sends truth and integrity out to the outer boundaries, beyond which is the outer darkness and the gnashing of teeth, and draws it back into the center in a constant ebb and flow. The enlightened emotions are the vessel, as indicated by the cup, the vessel of the emotions are enriched constantly with the highest qualities imaginable, with all the graces, with elegance, with style, with compassion, with love and affection, and never tainted with anything negative or demeaning. And so we end up with these two symbols of transformation, the transformed mind and the transformed emotions, both of which together are capable of radiating divine qualities, love, joy. Joy is a good example. Joy is neither emotional nor mental. It infuses both. But we learn that we can attune ourselves to divine joy and radiate that joy out to fill the entire house, to fill the entire neighborhood. If we get good enough to fill the entire state, maybe even nation. It doesn't mean that people will automatically respond to it, but here and there, there will be people that will perk up their attention and say, I've just been filled with joy. And that's what the law of radiation is about. It's the way we transform ourselves from the human into the divine. Okay, I'm going to stop there and entertain comments or questions. We've got a couple minutes. Anybody?
A quick question, Carl. In terms of radiating out, is it always just the physical, like house to neighborhood to community to state in that way, as opposed to, say, like a group of like-minded people or a professional group or something like that?
Well, it can happen that way, of course, but you never want to be that selective. You want to always radiate it for anybody that's on the wavelength. See, it's like when we do a healing or when you go to the New Life Clinic and Lichman's doing a healing. It's never just for the people there. It's for everybody reaching out for healing, wherever they might be. And in fact, that's a great example because one of the great traditions of the Worrells was the 9 o'clock healing. And at 9 o'clock every night, they would take 5 minutes to meditate, radiating healing energy out to anyone, wherever they might be in the world. They had some names that had been sent to them or called in or whatever, but generally speaking, it was available to anybody that could get on their wavelength. And that's a tremendous example of the law of radiation as I'm talking about it. It was, if you didn't know about it, but you were reaching out in your heart for some healing, you could still respond to it. Does that help?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else?
Well, Carl, this weekend when I was reading from the esoteric astrology, this whole reading tonight is reminding me of that. Part of it was talking about how humanity is constantly being evoked by the will of God. So thinking about this center of the circle and then our expansion and our radiating out, part of it is our will. It's always a response, though, isn't it? It's always a response that we are being evoked. We are being...
Sure, because we're not independent contractors here.
Okay.
We are part of the body of the Christ, which is part of the life of God, which is part of the larger life of Irving, and so on and so on and so on. And where this breadcrumb trail leads us is of complete irrelevance. When we get to that stage where we've gone as far as we can go, then the next step will open up. But it's a life within a life within a life within a life. And the sooner we can understand that we're out here on the outer periphery, and the only way we can activate greater energy is to align ourselves with the central point and keep on going back central point to central point to central point to central point, That's the way we escape, break down our limitations. Rose.
So this thought just popped into mind. Is that why the, I don't like to use the word, but the sin of omission is worse than the sin of commission? Because we have been offered, whether it's healing energy or opportunity, and our failure to respond is that sin of omission.
Well, I'm not going to say that the failure to respond to the divine evocation is worse than, say, murdering somebody. That's a sin of commission, which...
Yeah.
So it depends upon... But if the sin would be where what you're saying applies is, if you think you're doing everything the way a spiritual disciple should be, but you're not paying any attention to what's evoking you,
right,
then you're kidding yourself. It's a delusion. And so it's still a sin of separation.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Anything else? That's it for tonight. I'll try to rest my voice and be in better shape 2 weeks from now, or certainly Wednesday. Yes. Anyway, that's it. Thank you all, and we'll do this again in 2 weeks.